The following interview was recorded at the National Youth At-Risk Conference in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show,
Lamar Darnell Shields.
What's up, Sound Bombing community? It's your man, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields. I am at the Great National Youth At-Risk Conference in Savannah, Georgia. It is amazing. Over 2,000 facilitators, providers from across the country are here in Savannah, Georgia. We know that many of us are dealing with this virus. A lot of the conferences have been scheduled, rescheduled because of the virus, but people are still here coming to this conference. I've been coming here for about 15 years, and I guess over the last couple of years, I ran into this woman who, we have a mutual friend who shared some amazing things about her. And she, every year I was on her about writing, getting her stuff published, because I think she's an amazing facilitator. And she walked up to me yesterday and she shared this beautiful book that's in front of me. It's Intimate Partner Violence Among African-American Male Victims, Up Close and Personal with an Unnoticed Population, a Social Work Response. I think next to teachers, next to moms and dads and grandfathers and grandpa, I think social workers are freaking superheroes, rock stars, and one of them is sitting right in front of me. This is a beautiful book. I want to welcome to the Sound Bomber community my friend Dr. Irma J. Gibson. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
So welcome again back to this amazing conference. You and I have been knowing each other for how long now?
Oh my goodness, 1999.
It's been that long?
It's been that long. We didn't meet.
That's
though.
A great song, 1999.
Yeah,
shout out to Prince.
Oh, I love it. But we didn't meet until later. But we met through the mutual friend. I heard about you guys. You probably heard about me. Yeah. But we actually met here at the Youth at Risk Conference a few years ago.
So now, you know, I tell people it don't matter how we met, how we know each other, but the fact that we do know each other. So let's talk about the conference. So you're here. You came in yesterday.
Yes.
Just share with the listeners what this conference means to you.
Oh, my goodness. When I joined the Planning Council about 10 years ago, I realized that this is the conference that brings educators together and the child and family welfare system. I don't think they recognize that. The same two entities that need to work with our children didn't know that they actually were meeting together at this conference. And so when I joined and started to be a part of it, and I heard the amazing speakers, one being you and your wife.
Yay, yay.
Man,
shout out to me.
I said, oh my goodness, I got to continue to be a part of it. And I just think that it does exactly what we need, and that's speak life into our future, and that's our children.
So why did you become a social worker? I mean, you can do a whole lot of things.
Yes.
But my mama, let me just say, my mama was a social worker. I'm talking social worker from the old days, the 70s and 80s, kids would show up at my house, and she'd be like, this is a new kid. You know, you can't do that now,
Irma.
Get locked up putting
that's
a kid.
Right.
So
that's
why
right.
did you feel the need to become a social worker?
I had a professor in undergrad. It just kind of found me. And he saw potential in me. My undergrad degree is in sociology. And he said, don't you want to go get your master's in social work? And I said, no.
Had you got but, you got an undergrad in social work?
I actually have a BA in sociology.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so that professor really saw the potential. And when I realized what social workers do, that was me. I've always been that person that didn't like to see people treated wrong. And even when I was a kid, and I go back, doctor, and I look at papers that I wrote for my English teacher in high school, 19.
So you've been smart your whole life. Look
Man,
at
listen,
over here bragging. What paper did you write?
I, I wrote a paper that said, if you had three wishes, what would you wish? And I still have it.
So what are three wishes?
And guess what it was? Peace for the world. That anybody who's struggling in poverty would find what they need in order to survive and be happy, and that everybody would be happy. Nothing for me.
So you've been doing this on this path since you were in high school.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some things that social workers are responsible for? Because a lot of people may not understand what social... When I think of social workers, I'm going to take you way back. This is what I call the social worker film you got to watch. It's a movie called Claudine. I love it.
Okay.
Shout out to Diane Carroll, James Earl Jones.
Excellent.
And it was at a time during the 70s where black men were being taken out of the household.
Oh, yeah.
And
remember
that movie where she was dating? She had to hide stuff.
Oh,
she had to hide the ironing board and the TVs.
Yeah.
And she could have black men. And at that time, people were saying that's when the black family started to decline.
Right.
What are some things that social workers are responsible for doing?
I have to tell you, the misconception is that we destroy families, but we actually keep families together.
So where do you think that misconception comes from?
Probably, I have to be honest, a little bit of media.
Okay.
And folk who are doing social work, quote unquote, but have not obtained the degrees that are required. See, we have a special curriculum where we don't just look at what's happening with the mind. We look at the environment that contributes to that. Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which says that if you don't get love, nurture, support, safety, and that one human that you can depend on in those 0 to 7 years, it's going to be hard to reach your potential. So we talk about that, and that's what we study, and that's what makes our profession unique.
You're right. Now that I think of the movie, I remember this, it was a white woman, again, in the film, who basically was seeming like she was tearing the family away. I think about Good Times, when Jeanette Dubois, when she adopted Penny, Janet Jackson, the social worker had to come over. And so I could see why some people would think you all were breaking up families, but that's not what you do. What do you bring that's unique to the table as a social worker?
Change agents who look at the person in the environment, not just at how the mind is working, but what contributed to that, that goes back to the family. Family being one of the main agents of socialization, school, media, peers, social media, religion and employers. That's who shape all of our values, but family is the main one. If that family is not providing, and I know you've been in this business a long time, you know that there are some who can't provide. Poverty is a weapon of mass destruction, and so we as social workers recognize that, and we make that a point in exposing what it is, not just that tore them apart or that's impacting them, but what we can do to bring it back together as a family, as a whole, individually, mental, holistically.
So how has the profession changed since you came through the doors years ago? Not that long. She's young. Y'all should say she young. So how has it changed since the years when you came through the door? And what direction is the School of Social Work across the country going through?
Dr. Shields, in terms of the curriculum, believe it or not, when I walked across the stage at the University of Georgia in 1985, the curriculum is the same. It's just changed in terms of the current events that are happening. We had to change. But in terms of being change agents, I'm going to tell you this. Technology has been a blessing and a curse. We are mandated reporters. And with this generation, I have to be honest, I'm scared. Because snitching is what they don't believe in.
Yeah, snitches get you stitches, as they say.
And
they say that in Chicago, but I'm sure they say it down here.
Of course. But guess what? We are mandated reporters. And the ones who we really look out for, our children. If they are not receiving what they are supposed to get.
So you snitching.
We have to snitch.
So Irma, you are a snitch over here.
Snitch.
You got a PhD in snitching.
Yes, I do.
Hey, but it's about the children, right?
It's about the children.
So since then, you have written this beautiful book. I'm looking at this beautiful book. The color is like an off-white, purple, intimate partner violence among African-American male victims. Why did you feel like it was important to do a book around African-American male victims when there's so many other victims that you could have written about? Why the people that look like me?
Excellent question.
I typically ask good questions. Yeah, that's what I was told.
I love it. I am the mother of a black male. You being a black male know that two strikes are already against you, or could be, when you're born into the world. That's black and male. From slavery days, you've been misunderstood and treated unfairly. Now, my son met what we thought was his soulmate. in college, sophomore year, going into his junior year. She turned out to be Dr. Jekyll and Miss Hyde.
All of it.
All of it. Beautiful on the outside, but tore up on the inside. And I beat myself up because as a social worker, I should have
Noticed the signs. But you were just happy he was hooked up.
Oh, huh? I was just happy. He was happy. We done
found it. So you didn't see any of the signs you avoided?
I did not. I looked over it.
So even with your degree,
yes,
you didn't see the signs.
I did not see it. Even teaching it in the classroom. Talking about it.
Probably, you probably didn't see it because you didn't expect it to come in your home. I think when it's that close to your home, it's kind of hard to see those things.
I did not. What I decided to write about is because of the response from first responders. Very insensitive. You're a man. And then she's beautiful. And so they are
She's beautiful and violent?
Oh, yeah. Man. And so, but believe it or not, the first responders wanted to look beyond that, and it almost drove me nuts. I mean, I even had to go to the chief of police to say, do I have to do an insensitivity class or something? But he said, it's the culture. And not just the culture in the police department, it was all the society.
So the girlfriend was violent towards
you? She was. Very needy.
So what did that do to his ego as a man?
He had gone
into... you're talking about violence among men, what did that do to him?
He talked about, particularly in his chapter, the alpha male, and how society, a lot of the times, because of what they've been taught at home sometimes, embraces that and thinks that a man is supposed to act a certain way. A man is not supposed to be sensitive. A man is not supposed to cry. A man is not supposed to have feelings. That was totally opposite what I had taught him. What I had taught him, you do not touch a woman, period, in a negative way. But at the same time, I want you to be happy. You need to be treated like a king, like you treat her like a queen. That wasn't happening, and he knew that he was caught between a rock and a hard place. Started to go into a depression. Changed his whole life on campus.
So what were some of the first signs of this abuse from the girlfriend towards your son?
Anger, inability to control anger, which is a normal emotion, but it's what you do with it. And so she would tear up stuff, even physically leave marks.
On him?
Yes.
Your baby boy.
My baby boy.
And you don't, listen, I'm looking at Irma. She's small inside. But she looked like she got a mean right.
My
so
God.
Don't you put your hands.
I'm like, listen, just like I teach young ladies that you want to be treated like a queen, I feel like young men need to be treated as kings.
So Irma, did he tell you, did he come
eventually
to you and say, Mom, my girlfriend is doing this? And how did you respond? And would you have responded differently if your son was your daughter?
You know what? That is a good question.
Come on, Irma.
Probably,
I'm on it. I'm two for two.
I believe so. But then again, because I've never had a daughter, that's a hard question to answer. But I can tell you this. A mother's love. I went all out. I probably put myself in danger to save him.
So what was your response? What was your first response?
I told him that you got to get out of the relationship. And at the same time, I was still trying to love her. I wanted to love her back to life. I wanted to love her to be better. And we couldn't do that. And so my first response
it's
was,
hard
get out.
To love some people that you don't like, right?
It is. It is.
Like, it's hard.
Like,
it's hard
goodness.
To love some people that you don't like. Even though King and Jesus, we talk
Absolutely.
About their word. And
Absolutely.
Some countries don't even have a word to define
right.
what it is.
Right.
So I can get that.
Yes.
So no judgment? There was no
judgment?
No judgment. Where do you think he felt the judgment came from, being a male having to share that this girl has put her hands on him, threatened?
That if you allow that to happen, you're weak. You're not
so
a man.
So where was that coming from?
I learned behavior in their homes and learned behavior from society. Ever since the beginning of time, and then girls are expected, sugar and spice and everything nice? Boys, puppy dog tails and snails.
Snips and snails, I don't even know what that is.
Come on now.
What the heck is a snip and snail and a puppy dog
and
tail?
And so I'm saying, listen. Boys need to know that it's okay to be sensitive and you can still be strong. And even teaching Terrell that, he still struggles with that. Is it okay to be an alpha male? Is it okay not to be? And he still struggles with that, with everything that he went through.
So this book, Intimate Partner Violence Among African-American Male Victims, written by Dr. Irma Gibson.
Yes.
This is a personal story.
It's personal.
So beyond just the research, this is a personal
it's
story.
It's personal.
This came into your house. I think it's important that men do talk about abuse. We don't have that conversation enough. We think it's female against female, or we think it's female, or male against female. Yes. And so you're bringing up a very, very important topic. How can people, Irma, get in contact with you? How could they find out about the book? And how could they maybe bring you to their school, agency, program for you to talk about this particular topic?
I would love that. The book is available on Amazon. And when you click on the Amazon website, it will take you directly, if you pull up the title or my name, it's going to take you to that book. And then it's going to allow you to look inside, almost to the first chapter, the end of the first chapter. So that is how you get the book and discover the contents. For me, irma.gibson@famu.edu. That's irma.gibson. at famu.edu.
Shout out to FAMU, the Rattlers in the building. Shout out to all the HBCUs. So, Irma, I know you're busy. I know you got to get back on the road. I want to thank you for just sitting down, talking to me, joining me. Soundbombing Show, thank you for your amazing work. This book is an amazing piece of work. I thumbed through it just a little bit, but I'm going to go through it a little more. I'm going to share it with all of our guests and hosts to come on the show. And encourage other males to speak up about this particular situation.
Please.
And you are not weak when you talk about your partner. So I thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.